Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. Books.
Where would we be without books? Where would we be without Gutenberg? It's a rhetorical question, sir. But where would we be without books?
From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Michael Silverblad, and welcome to Bookworm. Today, my guest is Ryan Gaddis, who made such a splash, such a hit on Bookworm with his last novel, All Involved, that I couldn't wait for his new novel to appear. It's called Safe. It's published by a imprint of Farrah, Straus & Giroux, known as MCD. And, well, first of all, I hear that this book came to be because of a phone call you got. Let's hear the story.
Well, I think, you know, because of all the connections I'd made for All Involved, and it was everyone from former gang members to firefighters to nurses, I'd kind of kept that group of people, kept in touch with them. Unfortunately, there have been a couple folks who passed away from the first group I mentioned, and I normally got bad phone calls. When I got the call at roughly 6 a.m. on a Sunday morning, I was expecting bad news, but what I heard instead was, do you want to see a safe get cracked? And the answer, of course, to that was yes.
Now, All Involved was a novel that took place during the L.A. riots of 1992. And one of its fascinations was that, yes, there was a political, socio-political aspect to the rioting, but then there was another aspect of it as well, of people who were using the occasion of the chaos, the furor, as an opportunity to commit crimes, particularly gang members. And you got to know those gang members. Now, place me in context. What does safe cracking have to do with gang activity?
Well, I think anything that can make money, anything that can potentially be used to benefit the larger group is something. You know, it doesn't matter if it's creative accounting or safe cracking. It can be used. And I think when you have a milieu, if you will, that relies on illicit income, keeping that in a safe as opposed to in a bank is actually a really important thing to have. So being able to crack that, open those things, get access is useful.
Safe crackers seem here to be caught in an in-between world between people who are locksmiths, who may in fact be being hired and trained by the DEA to be able to open safes, and people who are involved with safes as a place to store their ill-gotten gains, their illicit goods. And so one of the two central characters in this book is a guy who used to be a gang member, used to be an addict, and now he works for a locksmith. Mm-hmm. He's learned to be gradually, slowly, painfully, an honorable, dependable, sober guy who knows how to work with safes. Mm-hmm. It's a very interesting thing because we learn almost immediately at the beginning of this novel, Safe, that this is not a matter of taking a stethoscope and listening to the clicks of the locks. What we all know about safe cracking from movies is not an accurate portrayal. What is it?
Well, I think in this case, it really is cracking. It's not picking. You know, it's using a small sledge. It's using drills. It's using a very violent way of getting into that mechanism and moving it or breaking it, shifting it just enough to gain access. And I think I was fascinated to see that in person because my understanding of it really did come from, say, Michael Mann's film Thief or my other things I've seen on television and film. But to be there in a garage watching two guys work on a safe right in front of me using drills, using this kind of heavy stuff, it really gave me a much better understanding. And I think that's when I kind of ended up leaning into this metaphor of boxing throughout, because the character of Ghost is also, you know, a former boxer, and that's how he tends to describe safecracking. It's like punching.
And you, Ryan Gaddis, were given approximately an hour to watch this process and ask whatever questions you had about what was going on.
Yeah, any questions I wanted, although there was no initial stipulation as to the amount of time. It was whenever they're done, they're done. So,
whenever they're done, you'll never hear from them again.
Pretty much.
They'll disappear.
Yep.
So whatever research you're doing on what might be a novel is either happening in that time period, whatever it is, or not.
Yeah, stakes were high. Stakes were incredibly high. I think for me, it was a matter of asking a series of questions so that I could have enough to really go out and do more research and background on my own and create the rest of the story. I think the first thing I asked was, are you ever left alone? And they said, yeah, absolutely, all the time. We're officers of the court. You know, we get left alone all the time. It's a myth that someone in film or television would, you know, not leave someone alone when anything they touch is considered chain of evidence. Okay, that's good to know. Does anyone ever come back? Oh, sure, they come back all the time. I had somebody pull a gun on me last week. Okay, can you please explain to me how many times someone has come back or pulled a gun on you? Oh, I don't know. More than I can count. And this kind of led to, at least for me as a novelist, the most important question, well, is there a way for you to explain this psychology of survival? Is there a way for you to account for why you're still standing here in front of me in what sounds like an incredibly dangerous job?
Now, you mentioned Ghost. Who is Ghost?
Ghost is the main character. He's changed his name.
Several times.
Several times.
We don't ever really hear his real name in this book.
We don't know his real name, but we know he goes by Ghost. And that actually comes from how he views this world of being a freelance safecracker, working for the DEA or his locksmith boss or the FBI or whoever needs him in a given moment.
I'm talking to Ryan Gaddis about his novel, Safe. It's a novel about criminals. It's a novel about criminal life. It's a matter of survival. And this book, I would say, it's not just punching as a metaphor for safe cracking. The people, many of our significant people in this book, are dealing with cancer and are dealing with cancer for their loved ones. So it's the sense of life taking you apart, taking you down, and you're having only a certain amount of time, not just to crack the safe, but to figure out what your life is supposed to be about. And for Ricky Mendoza, also known as Ghost, although Ricky Mendoza is also a false name, he's now clean and sober. And the person he loved most in the world, his adoptive father's daughter, Rose, she's died. And she's left behind a mixtape of songs on one side, that are supposed to help Ghost know himself, and on the other side of songs that are supposed to help him know her better. I mean, one of the songs is called Demolition Girl, so we know what her sensibility was about. And he's played this tape cartridge over and over again. It's his prized possession. It's the code to who they both were. And she's taught him that the key to being sober is not just attending programs, it's changing your goals in life. And his goal in life, once he knows that his cancer is back, is to get enough money to be able to pay the bank mortgages of people, both friends and strangers, who are going to be dispossessed of their houses. Someone calls him a ghetto Robin Hood, and there is some of that in this novel. He's returning to a life of crime for the sake of the possibility of doing good before he dies.
Yeah.
So is this a crime novel then, and is he attempting a crime?
That's a great question. And it's one I suppose I have to admit, even as the author, I don't know that I have the definitive answer to it. For me, this was always about his journey. In some ways, trying to be true to the highest goal Rose ever had for him, which was to do something great, to help people, to do something selfless, that it happens when he's already very much in the throes of confronting his own mortality. He doesn't go see a doctor, but he knows his cancer's back, and he's just going to do what he can, I think.
He's not only going to do what he can, he lets us know early on, once he's done what he can, he's going to put an end to himself. So that he's going to get out of here fast.
I think he knows once he's undertaken what he's undertaken. He doesn't do so as an ignorant man. He does so as a man who absolutely 100% understands what he's up against. He knows these systems. He knows what they do. And I think if there's something heroic about him, it's that he's willing to keep going regardless. He's willing to sacrifice himself, if you will, for the benefit of others, especially after everything he's been through. You know, he knows he did ill when he was younger to a lot of people. And all he's trying to do on his way out is help as many people as he possibly can. And he has this moment of, not moment, moments of always feeling as if he's not doing enough.
What kind of cancer does he have?
It's alluded to. We don't really go into it, but it's likely a brain tumor of some kind.
When I suggest, because there's a lot of characters with cancer in this book, that cancer is a metaphor for safe cracking too. Do you disagree, or is that just Michael doing his strange bookworm thing of finding meaning everywhere?
Well, I don't ever think of anything as you just doing your strange bookworm thing. I think the thing that I find so valuable and fascinating about this show is the ways in which you get authors to perhaps even reconsider their own work because of the piercing way that you go at it. So if you're seeing anything from me right now, perhaps it's not something that I thought of originally, but I'm trying to incorporate and think, oh, how is this possible? And I think that's the beauty of reading in general, but it's also the beauty of talking about books with other readers.
Now tell me about Linwood. Linwood seems to be a special place in this book, which takes place all around Los Angeles, but there are certain areas that have mythologies. You know, that are special mythologies to the characters in this book.
Absolutely. I think, I mean, you've hit on it. Linwood is a special place in the book because it's a special place to me. Much of All Involved takes place in Linwood. An enormous amount of the folks I spend time with and talk to, you know, from that particular world are from in and around Linwood. I still go up to Fireball High School and spend time with the creative writing English theater program there to help out as much as possible. My mural crew, Uglar Works, just helped create the first mural in Linwood with the help of Linwood High School and Fireball High School. So I think it's safe to say that you know, in my day-to-day life, it plays an enormous role. And I think the reason why that is, what I can feel you pushing me towards in your ever so wonderful way, is that I think I feel understood in Linwood in a way that I've never really felt understood. And I think it's primarily because of what I've been through when I was 17 and my nose was torn out and I had 2 facial reconstructive surgeries. You know, this is part of my story. It's something I share with people. But so often around the world, I get, you know, pitiful eyes in response to that or sympathy. And I must say, you know, being in Linwood, I find it to be a place of great empathy because of what the city has been through, particularly in the late 80s, early 90s with gang violence. It's a rare thing for me to ever talk to anyone who hasn't either been touched by it directly or had family members touched by it. So I find a spiritual fidelity there, I suppose, that I haven't found anywhere else. And as a result, I think that's become a great inspiration for how I write.
I'm Michael Silverblatt, and you're listening to Bookworm from the studios of KCRW. I'm talking with Ryan Gaddis about his new novel, Safe. We'll continue after this short break.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. 2 FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air, new music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.
I'm Michael Silverblatt, this is Bookworm, and I'm talking with Ryan Gaddis about his latest book, Safe, about 2 men with loved ones at stake who challenge us with what it means to be good on the gritty side of life. But I have to confess, I wanted you to take me to Linwood. I wanted you to take me to eat what these characters are eating when they're eating tamales. I wanted to confess that so much of what you're writing about, I've lived in Los Angeles for 30 years, and yet it's a world I don't encounter. It's a world under the surface from the world in which I live. In the same way that you're given the opportunity to watch Safe Crackers doing their job and have them answer questions, would you be able to take me around?
Absolutely, I'd love to.
So honored, because not being able to see and know, I'm reading a book about Los Angeles, but it's about the Los Angeles that is a shadow to me, a ghost.
Sure.
And these characters are my tour guides. Mm. The safe cracker in this book, this Robin Hood, this man, a safe cracker, is going to be forced into a marathon of safe cracking. Safe after safe after safe after safe, any of which could be manipulated so that handled incorrectly, they'll blow up. We've witnessed this once in this book, that there's dynamite in some of the safes. In other of the safes, there are weapons, guns, and he doesn't want to give the gang powers that be more access to more guns. But he wants the money. He's struck a deal where 40% of what he finds in these safes, which have stayed around in storehouses because the gangs have stolen the safes, but they don't have a safecracker. People have tried. The safes have been deformed. They've been hit at, beaten over the years. Some of them can't open anymore. And he is going to essentially be doing the equivalent of deep sea diving or historical excavation of all kinds of things that were secreted in these safes, some of which are generations old. Now, that's a fantastic conceit for a novel. When you saw these guys, did you think, what if they have to do 30 in a row?
No. No, I didn't think that at all. I was so blown away by the just the kind way that they worked on an antique safe. Wow. They were doing everything they possibly could to be gentle so that it could be rebuilt, because they genuinely viewed it as a beautiful object. You know, as far as a multi-safe marathon, that's something that just came in when I got to the plotting stage, and it seemed like, you know, how can I amp this up? How can I take this to another level, and yet still be able to connect it again to this mythology of Linwood, but also the history of Los Angeles. All of these safes that you've mentioned were stolen during the 92 riots.
They contain, from safe to safe, jewels and valuables, family heirlooms, papers and photographs, a gold-plated baby rattle that's used as a maraca. I mean, it's in a way, living in this circumstance, the people lose contact with the things that are precious to them. And that this is an act, in a sense, of attempting to give people their lives back. Mm. I mean, I don't want to justify safe cracking and robbery, and yet, Ghost, his instincts are so good. Mm. They're so human. He has picked up so much, so many phrases from the meetings. I'm going to say it because I can, I assume, 12-step meetings that he's attended. And he's become a person who knows how to speak a moral language and is now asking himself whether he knows how to live a moral life.
Mm. That's a beautiful way of putting it, I think. And I think ultimately, isn't that what 12-step programs hope to create within those who do them?
It's what every kind of redemption and salvation hopes for, that there'll be another way of living that will be a better way of living. It's what, in fact, we all hope for, no matter what we turn to, that when we turn, we are turning towards something that will save us, that will redeem us.
I think he's seeking fulfillment, but perhaps knowing he'll never get there. It doesn't matter how many safes he cracks, it'll never be enough. But along the way, you know, there's that moral language you've mentioned, the way that that's rewired him. But I think that's perhaps welded to this idea of intimacy that he has received a foster father out of this as well, that every time he opens a safe, he has a window into a world. Again, perhaps in the same way a book is a window into a world, at least a good book. And that helps change him step by step. And perhaps the thing that sticks with him most and sticks with his boss most, it doesn't matter how many safes they've opened over the course of their careers, that they still wonder about this mystery of the baby's booties that they found in a safe once that happened to have blood on them. and they've asked around and they've checked with multiple law enforcement agencies, and they're always trying to figure it out, and they just realize it's not possible. Knowing the answer isn't possible.
The hugely moving thing to me in this book is that Ghost and Rose have a conversation originally about drugs, which is that there's never any such thing as enough. You've never had enough, you've never gotten enough, you've never taken enough. And now, in this new life, that question of enough, what will be enough money to save enough people? And he realizes that his whole life has been wired around this question of never enough. Never enough to save anyone, never enough safes to be opened, never enough drugs to be consumed or sold. And that sense of the endlessness of life having something to do with not being able to feel that enough is enough. By the end of the book, in its last moments, he has the feeling that he has enough. Even though it's not enough quantitatively, qualitatively, it is enough, huh?
I think he comes to the realization, I suppose, that it will have to be enough because it's the best he can do. And which might seem like a small thing for any number of other characters, it's a very big thing for him.
I've been talking with Ryan Gaddis, author of Safe, published by MCD, which is a division, an imprint of Ferris Strauss and Giroux. Thank you, Ryan, for joining me.
Thank you, Michael. My pleasure.
You can comment on today's show or read an excerpt from Safe at kcrw.com/bookworm. Download the podcast from kcrw.com or from iTunes. You can also listen on demand with KCRW smartphone apps. My co-producer is Connie Alvarez. Alan Howard, associate producer, served as co-producer today. The technical director is Mario Diaz. Special thanks to my assistant, David Sobel. I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm.
I am a bookworm, he is a bookworm, she is a bookworm, we are all bookworms. And we're just reading this. I am a bookworm, we are all bookworms.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. This program is produced in the studios of KCRW Santa Monica. You can access archives of all Bookworm programs and podcasts, the most recent ones, at kcrw.com/bookworm. The Bookworm themes were composed and performed by Ron and Russell Mayle of Sparks.
I am a bookworm, he is a bookworm, she is a bookworm, we are all bookworms.
I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm when Danzy Senna is our guest.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air. New music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.